Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. And could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by one of my favourite writers. I've had quite a good day for that. Chris McQueer, welcome along.
Hey mate, cheers for having me.
Well Chris, what we're going to do today is, given your allegiances to Celtic, we're going to go through, like we did with Hearts last week with Craig Fowler, players that link both Motherwell and Celtic. I've got a list in front of me, in no sort of order it must be said, but they're basically players through our lifetimes that we'll remember for pulling on the hoops and also the claret and amber. Let's get right into it. We'll start with the first person I've got on my list, and that is Stephen McManus.
He's the first Celtic player whose autograph I ever got. I met him, it was a game, when was it? It was Celtic and Aberdeen back in maybe 2004, I think it was. And he had just kind of started, I think he'd made maybe a couple of starts for Celtic. Well, before the game, we get tickets to the school, and we're up sitting in the stands before the game. And he came running to meet like all the boys for the school, and he was the first Celtic player whose autograph I ever got.
Did they get quite a hard time for the Celtic fans? Like I can remember him being captain and maybe being a bit underrated, but
I think
he did a solid job.
People always say like he had his limitations, but see, like under Stratton, like him, Caldwell, like they weren't certainly one of the worst centre back pairing Celtic I've ever had.
Yeah, maybe just lacked that wee bit of kind of, I don't know, a kind of Van Dijk type character who's got
just
kind of Uzi's class. They were quite
they were just too very ordinary.
And Strachan obviously took him down to Middlesbrough, and then following that he came back up and joined Motherwell, where I thought he did a very good job. He was
Is he get a kind of good rep among Motherwell fans?
Yes, I think so. I think the majority saw the job he did. He brought a lot of experience to the back line. He scored the opening goal in the he scored the second goal in the playoff as well. That kind of put us really on track for that brilliant 6-1 two-legged victory. That season, everyone was struggling, and I think that his experience, Stephen Pearson's experience, and the playoff really kind of saw us through. There was obviously individual performances, but I think maybe people saw the player that had played in the Champions League, had captained Celtic, had won so many caps for Scotland as well, and thought we were going to get a guy at the peak of his powers, where as we kind of know that players that have got that kind of background aren't going to join Motherwell unless they're kind of moving towards the end of their career. But I certainly thought he did a very good job, and then he moved on to the coaching side, and he was thought of very highly there before he moved back to Celtic.
Back to Celtic, no, I always liked him at Celtic. It was the very definition of unspectacular, but he was solid enough. I don't remember him making too many mistakes or anything at the back. He was just there.
Well, a guy that certainly got a lot more exposure and a lot more headlines, Scott McDonald, came through, signed by Terry Butcher. He'd been released by Southampton, or they had him on trial and they thought he was overweight. And to be honest, I think there was a few points of Scott McDonald's career where he didn't look like he was carrying an extra couple of pounds, but Butcher got a lot out of him, and it's like the standout moment. His first spell at Motherwell was the two goals in the final day of the season. kind of ironic then that he would go on and make such a mark when he joined Celtic.
Mm-hmm. I remember that day, the helicopter Sunday. There was about 18 man in my household.
I still feel quite torn about that whole occasion, to be honest with you. Like, yeah. I don't ever want our team to come and win the league or win anything in our ground. And so it was kind of horrible that you went that day and there was so many Celtic fans in the home end and everything else. And it was a pure nothing game. Like, Celtic seemed to be totally in control, and then to win it like that, you're delighted. But then you see the joy that it brought to someone else that you don't like, and you think so you're pure conflicted. But it was a memorable day. But I was more just delighted for ourselves than I was, well, a million times more than I was for Rangers. And I didn't have much sympathy for Celtic either, so it was a difficult one.
Yeah. He was some player I loved to come down. I thought especially when he came in beside Venegar and Hessling, the two of them worked so well, that kind of little and large partnership. I thought it was brilliant. He was a crack, and his players just always buzzing about and just always seemed to pop up with big goals as well.
The thing is as well, he's a pure asshole, isn't he? Like, you would hate him if he was playing against you. I can remember when he came back to Fir Park and scored and got it right up us, and you're like, you just despised him. But as soon as he came back to Motherwell, he was brilliant again. And
I know
his work rate was superb. The thing I loved about him as well is he would never sign until after pre-season had finished. He seemed completely dedicated to no doing a pre-season.
Quite respect that.
Exactly, it's a hustle.
I like players that have got a bit of attitude about them, and that they kind of seem like arseholes. Like near Beaton, and at Celtic, I can tell like he's an absolute like arsehole in the pitch. Like the way, like fulfills another player, and the ref blows the whistle, he'll get up and he'll kick the ball away from the other player, so they need to walk and get it. Like, he's just always trying these mad mind games and stuff. It's the kind of things like where, you know, if he played for Rangers, I would hate him. I would think, oh my god, I hate this guy so much, because he's doing it for Celtic. I just think.
There's a kind of history of players like that, is it? I think Neil Lennon's a good example of that.
Scott McDonald's got a bit of that as well.
They just kind of, they're one of these players that when they're your own, you're going to absolutely adore them. They're playing against you, you're going to despise them. Yeah. And I feel just like promotion to Scott McDonald. It sounds like you have too.
Why the hell's Scott McDonald? That was like the Scottish Sport Awards like 2 years ago. And Scott McDonald was kicking about, and anytime he got a picture to him with like a woman, you could see him because he's obviously quite wee. I was watching him, and anytime a woman came in for a picture of him, he would like get right up and he'd be stoned on his tiptoes next to him. He hangs like that. I love him, man. So funny.
I met him in town a few times as well when he played with Motherwell, and he liked a fag and stuff like that as well. So you've got to, again, doesn't like pre-season, liked going out during the week, getting a baby. Aye. Like to smoke and still did the business. That's quite old school.
That is, man. Apparently Larson used to like a wee fag as well.
Moravchik was another one, wasn't he? Moravchik,
I don't know.
Sure, they said Albert's. That's impressive. I think the other one that they always talk about was the boy Prozanetsky that played with Portsmouth in Croatia. Smoked like a chimney. Maybe there's something in that to be a key to success.
Aye, aye.
Next one on our list is Paul Lambert, who at Motherwell was part of the team that finished third and then second and played in the European ties, most famously against Borussia Dortmund, which won him his move to Germany. He goes on and wins the Champions League with Dortmund.
Aye, aye.
Comes back north and joined Celtic, and to be fair, Chris, he did very well at Celtic as well.
That's right. I thought he was one of my favourite players growing up. Just the guy could do everything. He was really good defensively, and I thought going forward he was brilliant. He had a wee eye for goal as well. I love Paul Lambert.
He kind of broke the mould, didn't he, in terms of players from recent times that went abroad, was a success, and then to be a big part of their Champions League winning team. Mm-hmm. You look at that Dortmund team that won it, and it's mm-hmm. just full of massive, massive stars. And then you've got this wee guy that's come from Motherwell.
I know.
It's kind of hard not to kind of feel a wee bit of pride in his success there. He obviously started out at St Mirren, but it's some achievement. And as I say, he came back, and I can remember any time we played in a Scotland side as well, he was pure linchpin. He had so much energy, but he was so strong in the tackle as well.
Aye, what a player.
Real, real talent. Another one that left Motherwell for Celtic, but this was a direct move at the time, was Phil O'Donnell, who was the club's record, still is the club's record fee received. His part in the 91 Cup final was well documented. He puts his head in a position where he really had no right to. Brave as a lion, Ali McCoy described him in the commentary.
Aye.
Great moment. The game was on the BBC Scotland channel quite recently, and he showed how much energy he had. I read a quote from Craig Brown, who said that if it hadn't been for injuries, he really thought that he could have went to the very, very top of the game. At Celtic, it never really worked out for injuries, and that was a bit of a part of his career until he came back home, I guess, to Fir Park at the end of his career.
Aye. I don't remember much of Phil O'Donnell when he played for Celtic in the kind of football in terms, because I was a bit younger at the time when he was at Celtic. But my auntie she was married to an ex-Celtic player at the time, and she was really pally with Phil O'Donnell, and like she tells stories about him, just about how genuine a guy he was, just how lovely he was. And yeah, I think everybody's got a really high opinion of him as a man as well as a footballer, and I wish I could have paid a wee bit more attention to football at the time. I could have, you know.
Yeah, I think that's it. We've been lucky to have quite a lot of players that played with Phil on the podcast, and you know how there'll be people that pass away that the kind of sincerity's come out, although they don't feel that sincere.
Aye.
Everyone's got a different example of just how down to earth and
aye.
How brilliant he was around the place. He seemed to get a second wind when he came back to Fir Park. He was a leader on the park. He was the captain of the team, obviously. His nephew, Davy Clarkson, was playing on the same side for him as well. And he really brought on Davy. The circumstances of his passing were just so tragic. He'll always be remembered fondly by supporters of Motherwell. And of course, Celtic as well. Celtic held a big tribute game to him as well, which was the most unfair tribute game that's ever been. The Motherwell 91 team had guys that were not kicking their ass off 50 and 20 stone each. And you get the likes of Larson and Sutton playing and everything else. It was an absolute farce. But I suppose a charity match, so you get away with it. You've played in quite a few charity matches, haven't you?
I've played in two. So I played in one that was just last year, and it was in Celtic Park. Go to play on the pitch at Celtic Park, and I remember like walking out the tunnel going to the pitch for the first time. I could not believe like the size of the pitch. Like I'm there every other week, like on the stands. And then when I was done there on the pitch, I was absolutely like overwhelmed. Like, Jesus Christ, the size of this place. It's totally different than on the pitch. And that really, the sense of occasion caught to me. I had a shocker. But I think the year before that, I played in like a kind of, it was like an old firm charity game down at Vale of Clyde, and playing for Celtic. And Frank McGarvey was the manager. And he was like, right, who can play right back? And I was like, I'll play right back. I'm quite happy just kind of stay out of the way. And he's like, right, you're at right back, pal. Rudy Vatter will be next to you, he'll keep you out. So, right, no bother. So, like, kind of, first kind of 5-10 minutes of the game, I was like, right, I'm going to try and make an impression here. I'm going to go for first, like, 3 minutes. I made a mad run forward for right back, get caught offside. Rudy Vatter lost the plot at me. So, he's like, don't you dare do that again. You're not good enough to be doing that.
Yeah, I actually don't realise how big an 11-a-side football park is as well.
That's glad to me, right? He's your man, him there. You stick with him. Do not leave him, right? Stick to his side. Was that right? No bother, Rudy, no bother. And Rangers swung in the corner. I lost my man when the guy scored. And Rudy Vata just went tonto. So that he was like slapping the ground. He was so angry at me. I was like, Frank McGillivray was like, you need to take me out or move me to the side of the pitch. You can't play next to this guy. He's going to kill me. It was just so funny. Like, just to be shouted at after Dave Adams was brilliant. Like, run for the bucket list.
The closest I got to anything like that was the Soccer Sixes last year at the Hydro. And then a Scotland fans team against an England fans team. And Don Hutchison was taking the Scotland team and Wes Brown took the England team. But I think it was the sponsors had organised this.
Aye.
They managed to get a team, like almost like you and I, going, right, okay, can we get seven players each? But we weren't giving them any way to get to Glasgow or anything like that. So inevitably, the English team, only about four of them turned up in the day. So they had to move some from the Scotland team onto the England team. Right. And Don Hutchison's just taking this incredibly serious. In fact, basically accusing those that went on to the English team of being traitors as well, which was quite hilarious. Properly trying to get in their heads. And when you hear Don Hutchison's accent as well, you're thinking, you've got a bit of a cheek here, pal. But and even then, that's a pretty small pitch, but you just realise you can't run about like you used to be able to.
I couldn't
believe there was a clock in the corner and it was showing like 7 minutes. I could have sworn I'd been running about for at least 40.
Like after the games, I had like a newfound respect for like professional players. So I don't know how you do this, man. In terms of fitness and like in terms of like vision, like how they pick it up as, like, I couldn't see anything that was on the pitch. I couldn't work out where I kicked for it. That was a mess.
It's definitely even like I think more because you're watching all these old games now because there's obviously no football. You see the shape of some of the players in the early 90s or the 80s and stuff like that. Like, how did they manage to get about the pitch the way they did?
No.
Well, they must just have an inner athlete. It's amazing. But anyway, just to get it on the record, I did score for Scotland. I'm only
well played,
my country. So that was a...
Well done, man.
That was a good moment.
Congratulations.
I know, a year on and still. I'm actually thinking about getting the strip framed. I'll maybe sign it as well. The next one I've got on my list, in fact, the next two didn't make quite as much an impact as the ones that we've previously discussed. Nadir Chiefchi.
Oh. See, he's one and all. See, when Celtic signed him, I was like, right, this is like kind of exactly what we need. Like, this is a proper dirty bastard. Like, this is what we need. Like, when we go up against teams in Europe, they always seem to have some great dirty player who's always winning throws, always diving. I was like, Nadir Chiefchi is like what we need in Europe. And I was like, well, I was ready for him to be like an next big king and go to number 7. I was like, yes, definitely. Give that boy number 7. He's got his score, no bother. And he was a donkey. So he was, man. Like, he just wasn't the same player. Like, for when Dundee United we signed him, I feel like, wasn't he the same?
I loved him when he came to first part, but the thing is, he's the epitome of somebody that, see if he's no interested. There's just no point in him being on. You could possibly tell within the first 5 minutes if he was going to be on it.
Aye.
And just because it's not the done thing to sub a player after 5 minutes, you would tend to get about an hour out of him, but just completely under draws. But see when he fancied it, just the wee touches and...
Aye.
Because it was brilliant at United. It was so good at Dundee United.
One about on Twitter, and it was like his highlights for when he was at Dundee United. His touches and his turns and his finishing was amazing.
It was a real thorn on our side when he played against us. And then the only time he really turned it on properly was the last day of the season. So that would have been 2018. Against Accies, we won 4-0 and he was brilliant. But the thing is, the next week was a cup final, and because he was alone from Celtic, he couldn't play. And it was almost as if he had tried to prove a point that I'm worthy of a cup final place. The only problem was but couldn't actually play him because he was cup tied essentially. So, and then there was kind of a lot of folk. He's like a cult hero, I think. He's one of, because he's so capable of a moment of magic. You just want that kind of player about your team, but he's far too much of a luxury for us to be able to afford. I'm not even that sure where he is now. I'm sure he went to Turkey initially. But when did Celtic get him off the books? Because I don't think he was even released that summer.
That would have been the season he was on loan, wasn't it? At Motherwell.
Did he get released at the end of that season?
Must have been, aye. When would that have been, like 2016, 17?
2017, 2018. Because remember, he went to Plymouth as well and they sent him back.
No, he must have got released. I don't know.
He's in Turkey. I'm not going to have a go at pronouncing the team's name. It says that we're going in Wikipedia as well. It's also interesting that he played with the Dutch under 17 side and then was capped for Turkey's under 19 side. So even moves about fucking international teams is quite impressive.
It's a proper German name, isn't it?
I can't imagine he's even that old.
No.
he's only 28 and he's just recently turned 28.
I feel like he's been about forever. As well as one of their names, it's just kind of just always floating about, isn't he?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see him back in Scottish football.
He
seems like one of these characters that if he cropped up at a Partick Thistle or something like that, you'd be...
Yeah. I can see him at Hamilton Accies. Yeah, that would be my bet. Right.
That would break a few of our supporters' hearts. It really would.
Me, I know. It's kind of player going to.
A player that I'd be quite scared to have him back is the next one on the list, Kevin McBride, who he had a spell on loan at Motherwell, and there was talk at that point that a Celtic want him back. He's playing that well for Motherwell, and then we've got him in a permanent deal. And from that point on, he just didn't try a leg. he eventually got a move to Hibs. But he definitely had some talent in his locker, but just was so unwilling to use it. And his movement was terrible. He was quite scared and timid. And all the kind of positives that he had in the first part, his first spell, just never ever replicated it. I don't know how many appearances he made for Celtic, it must be said. It might be a wee bit one of these ones that made a sub-appearance or a League Cup appearance. I don't know if you're...
Like a player. No, I don't recall seeing him play, to be honest. No.
I'll check that one as we go on to the next one, which is Michael McGlinchey. And I actually sent you over a list earlier on because despite perceptions, I do actually prepare for these sometimes. and I had actually forgotten him from that list, but we're talking about the fact that he was a player that got to appear at the World Cup.
Aye, Michael McGlinchey. I remember I was saying earlier, like, I thought he was going to be the next big thing. Like, he always seemed to be kind of talked about playing for the reserves at Celtic, and he just didn't quite make it at Celtic. But I mean, he's went to play at a World Cup for New Zealand, so fair play to the boy.
He still seems to be playing in Australia for Central Coast Mariners. He's only 33, to be fair, so maybe a couple of years left in his career. One appearance for Celtic, eight appearances for Motherwell in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So a reasonable career, not much to really say. Only a sub appearance for Celtic against Livingston. You can tell I'm reading directly off his Wikipedia page here.
Yeah.
52 caps for New Zealand, 5 goals. Certainly, it was rare to see a player that has played for Motherwell playing at a World Cup. That was a bit of a strange one. It was a strange one as well because he's another one that had been capped by Scotland up to under 21s and then that was his native country. And while we talk about that, Kevin McBride never played for Celtic, so... He shouldn't have even been on the list.
I will.
Next up, we have got someone that played a lot more than the previous ones, Stephen Pearson, who came through the ranks at Firth Park, really made a big impact. It was McFadden and Pearson were the two assets. McFadden went to Everton, and then Pearson took over the mantle and did really, really well. There was a bit of taste in the way that he left the club, because he was pictured holding up the Celtic jersey before the deal was done, and the usual that fans get their backs up about things like that, obviously, and don't really forget. But I think by the time he came back to the club, it was pretty much forgotten about, and he won the fans over by how well he performed on the park. What always struck me about him is he's quite skinny and gangly, but he was really powerful and some engine on him as well.
I always liked him at Celtic. I remember one of the UEFA Cup games against Barcelona. I think it was the home leg. I think it was brilliant. Like, he just seemed so confident for this wee scrawny ginger guy. Do you know what I mean? As if he had the right to be that good at football. But I thought it was really good. Like, kind of, he would run for deep and stuff. Like, all good memories of Stephen Pearson. I thought it was magic.
Yeah, and another one, Champions League and goals. He went on to score the winner in the playoff final for Derby County. Another guy that's had a really good career. Next, I've got Scottish Cup 91 captain Tom Boyd. I can hear Motherwell fans kind of groaning as I mention his name, because a lot feel that he's very much kind of sullied his name or his reputation at Motherwell by the way he's spoken in the press, and he's been quite down in Motherwell, which is quite strange for a guy that really made his name at the club. Obviously went on to be an absolute legend at Celtic, won numerous titles, numerous trophies, more than titles, I guess. But the most significant one being ending the Rangers' charge for 10 in a row, I guess, Chris.
Aye, Tom Boyd. He's brilliant. He was one of the managers when I played at Celtic Park. He was brilliant. Just so such a cool guy. He's so funny. He's so chatty. I don't know. I imagine him to be like that. I can remember when I was younger as well. He was Norland. He was quite kind of unspectacular. So I didn't really care much for him when I was a wee boy, but looking back, you can see he's left some legacy at Celtic, and he's still well thought of. He's went down as a bit of a legend now.
His commentary in that Celtic television's absolutely howling, though, isn't it?
That's tragic, yeah. Lovely guy, lovely guy.
I think it's a shame that there's so many that really just kind of want to forget the fact that he was such a big part of that team just because of the way he's spoken and at various events and stuff like that. But saying that, there was a recent kind of former players event where he was very positive. So maybe he's turned over a new leaf. there's no doubt that he's very Celtic to the core now, and has maybe forgotten his roots.
Aye.
One that hasn't is Brian McClair. He was on a recent Nutmeg podcast and spoke really positively his time at Motherwell. That's where he started, went on to have a hell of a career at Celtic and then Man United as well. I always think it's quite strange to look back in that Man United team and Cantona's and Giggs and Beckham's, Sharp, Ince, and then this wee Scottish guy as well. he's kind of always struck me as quite unspectacular as well. I think we'd both be too young to remember him playing at Celtic or Motherwell in the first spells. He obviously came back to Motherwell, which wasn't anywhere near as successful, but another guy that had a hell of a career.
It was an event that was run by a kind of Celtic podcast, a Celtic Stay of Mind. They put on like a live event in Glasgow, and Brian McClair was one of the ones talking at it. His stories and that, and he's so funny as well. Like, he's some guy. He's an all man I wish I could have seen play. But like, go on to YouTube clips, and that's the extent of my knowledge of Brian McClair. Like, I look like some player.
Yeah, I think it's backed up. It was the kind of soonest thing when he was arguing with Paul Pogba, which would be an absolutely brilliant celebrity boxing match, it must be said. But the kind of argument about put all your medals on the table type thing. Brian McClair would need a big table. It's quite an incredible amount of success. And I think the fact that he went down to Man United and wasn't even a bit part player, he was a big part of Ferguson's really successful Man United team, it tells you all you need to know, really.
Aye, definitely.
First and only goalkeeper on the list I've got is Gordon Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Marshall was a regular for Celtic through
aye, aye.
The majority of the 90s. He came to Motherwell under Terry Butcher.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty solid, it must be said. The only kind of down point in Gordon Marshall's career, unfortunately, came in the League Cup final against Rangers, where they lost 5-1, and I reckon at least three of the goals could be put at the door of Gordon Marshall. He famously, I don't think it's famous, but amongst Motherwell fans, it's well known that he didn't go up and collect his medal. He was that gutted about his performance.
Wow.
And strangely, the end of that season, the Helicopter Sunday game, I wouldn't imagine it's one you've watched back many times, but the amount of one-on-one saves and everything else that he makes. For it, there was a story I told it on the Terrace podcast before Christmas, where Stevie Craigan talks about how Scott McDonald's going through, and there's a video from taken from the David Cooper stand, a Motherwell fan shouting, "Give the ball to Jerry," because Jerry Britton's in a better position. So he's wanting Scott McDonald to square it to Jerry Britton. And Jerry Britton said when he watched it back that if he had got the ball, he would have put it so far down Earbo's Road they would never have found the ball again. And I don't know if you know Motherwell, but I would have had to kind of go out the stadium, take a very sharp right and then a sharp left. So it ended up about a mile and a half away from the stadium. But Gordon Marshall, obviously, big ties to Celtic as well, given how many times he appeared for them. He was kind of proper professional, really. Did a job that day. It's a shame that cup final will maybe be what he's remembered for, but a very, very decent goalkeeper.
Aye. It was a bane of my life when I was younger. I used to collect the Panini sticker album. And honestly, I felt like every season I got about 20 Gordon Marshalls. So it's like you say, like, face always.
That's what, when you're going through, like, you see every so often, like, a Scottish photos Twitter page, and there's like, there'll be a Kilmarnock player, Alex Burke, I can remember. I used to always get him. got completely off track. I ended up watching, lockdown's doing strange things to me, but I came across like a Panini film.
Right.
It was a history of how this all started. Like football stickers and such like. It was absolutely class, honestly. It was so good.
Make sense of that. It sounds right up my street, man.
I'll try and get you the name of it right now, just because I've got the iPad here. I can't get it just now, but we'll work that out as we go along. But we went completely off track there. Just look at it. Marshall actually started his career at Rangers. Didn't play for Rangers. 101 appearances for Celtic. And Chris, you got him about 101 times in the sticker book as well. Move on to the next one, which is Cillian Sheridan.
Won't
spell at Motherwell. He's still playing in Cyprus. I'm sure he's got a few goals in the Champions League. He's a bit of a character on Twitter as well. His part seems really good. Didn't do a great deal when Mark McGee brought him in. Scored against Accies at their place in a 3-0 win, but can't really remember a great deal about Cillian Sheridan that was to... I can't remember him being rubbish, but I can't remember him being anything to write home about either.
I remember him kind of breaking through at Celtic, this big giant skinny boy. And for me, like, I remember, like, me and my pal talking about him at the time when he was kind of making the breakthrough for Celtic. My pal was like, "See the future of Celtic up front, Cillian Sheridan and Sean Maloney." He's like, "That is the front two." And obviously, didn't quite work out like that. But And he's brilliant. He's brilliant on Twitter. He's so funny, man. He's mad video, isn't he? And he said, he's, I don't know, right career, do you know what I mean? Like, fair play to him, going abroad and going to all these mad places. And he's played in Poland and Cyprus and all that. It's kind of tell you, I would like, if I was a football player, I'd quite fancy being a bit of a journeyman. So for me, he's done it the right way.
I think there's a lot to be said for kind of enjoying your career. And it's not as if he was blessed with so much ability, but if you're able to kind of go there and just work hard and get to see a bit of the world doing something you love, then...
Aye, that's the dream, you know.
That's an absolute ideal scenario. So, yeah, I didn't actually realise he played more times for Celtic than he did for Motherwell. I thought he was only kind of a handful of appearances for Celtic, but no, he...
Made a few, and I don't remember him ever looking terrible. I think he looked quite competent, do you know what I mean? Like, coming through the ranks and that, and scored a couple of goals, aye. I just didn't look, there's too much competition. It's kind of hard to break through at Celtic as a striker, I think, but... Just that much competition over the years, and we've always had a kind of good striker, at least one. So it's kind of hard for a youth striker to break through, but we've done it right.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. I had Tony Watt on yesterday, and I've heard him say before that he was never ever really going to make it at Celtic because it was a situation where basically any time. The strikers aren't scoring goals, they're more likely to look to bringing in someone else than looking from within and giving the young guy the opportunity. And that's more just because if the young guy then doesn't take that opportunity, he's kind of written off. And he just never felt like he was going to make the grade. Which is funny when you think that this is the same guy that scored a goal against Barcelona in a Champions League tie and a victory over Barcelona.
I know. I hope it works out for Tony Watt at Motherwell. So he seems like a good boy as well. He does seem like a good professional. A lot of people kind of seem to have doubts about his attitude and all that, but I don't really see it. Do you know what I mean? Like, from what I see and kind of read about him and you hear him talking interviews and that, he seems like a proper pro. He does seem to look after himself and he always tries, you know what I mean? He always puts a shift in as well. So, hopefully it works out from next season when it kicks off, hopefully.
Yeah, I think there's serious misconceptions about him, to be honest with you. He talked about that yesterday as well, just kind of feels that people have got free rein to write whatever they want about him and not really back it up with any certain facts. And the thing is as well, the Lower League Ramblings podcast he was on, and some of his stories from Belgium are absolutely class. If you can get a chance to listen to that, definitely. And fighting with the manager and things like that. But a lot of it didn't really seem his own doing. I think there was a time where he took everything that was written about him to heart as well. But now he's just a lot of it down.
Definitely, aye. Hopefully the kind of worst of that's behind him now. I do really, really do wish him well at Motherwell, and I hope he does kick on trees next season.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So we kind of covered Tony Watt, who's about five down in the list, so well done. That was a good link there, mate. One that I can't remember playing with Motherwell, unfortunately, I hear far too much of him on the television. In fact, I say that, but I would actually love to hear his voice right now, just because that would mean that there was football on the telly. Or live football on the telly. I don't want to hear him from a previous game, but Andy Walker, he's possibly more remembered for the shite he talks now than anything he did in a football park.
Hello, man.
Early 90s, his time at Celtic, I suppose maybe just a wee bit before.
Aye.
Your time?
I don't remember anything him at Celtic at all, man. Don't to me. I can't recall a single game of watched, even watched back, and I can remember Andy Walker and everything.
I could remember him in the latter part of his career. He had two spells at Celtic, 87 to 91 and then 94 to 96, but I can remember him at the likes of Hibs and Raith Rovers. I think he might have went to, I want to say Thistle, but But the media career is what has defined them now, and I just cannot stick them in Sky whatsoever.
I think that's the thing with these commentators. I think as soon as they get a kind of reputation like that, I don't know, it seems to kind of land them more work. So it's the guys that just are just murder, that just about dribble, that just get all the big games and that, and they end up everywhere. Like, mad, man.
Because he had a wee bit of a spat with Scott Brown. I remember, and you kind of think that if a player and a commentator are going to have a wee bit of an argument and a wee bit of a ding-dong, then that's going to inevitably lead to more exposure for both the player and the commentator. So as soon as Andy Walker heard that Scott Brown was talking about him, he'd be thinking, that's job done.
You're rubbing your hands together, right?
Fairly decent career to say the least, but not one that we remember much of. So we'll move on to the next one. And my favourite player in the list, Tommy Coyne, who is my childhood hero. He was unbelievable at Motherwell. First proper football hero for certain. Scored so many goals for Motherwell. He was just magnificent. He went to the World Cup in America, and at that point he was still playing with Motherwell as well. So he kind of, it said that one of the nights I was at, he achieved his dream while playing for Motherwell, and just sounded so class to hear that. Got to meet him a few times. Just couldn't have been nicer. It was so surreal. We did a Motherwell book, and I had got in contact with him to do an interview for it. Did that, no bother. And kept in touch with him. I've been told that he was kind of notoriously a wee bit funny with the press and everything else. So you kind of felt like you were getting him on side. And asked him if he would sign a couple of copies. To which he replied by just sending me his address. So I turned up at the house, and his boy's head to toe in a Celtic strip. Runs up the stairs, comes back down in the full Motherwell strip, and changed his dress code to suit the company. Couldn't do enough for us that sat and blathered away for ages. It was just an absolute hero. It was so, I can remember being properly heartbroken when he left the club. Harry Campman came in, a Finnish manager, and he kind of ended the career of quite a lot of the more experienced guys like Brian Martin and John Philibin, Dougie Amnett left at that time as well. And it was just kind of the whole personality of the club changed at that point. He was obviously trying to change the culture, and these guys were getting on a bit, but it was so good. And the World Cup thing is, I can't imagine there'll be many opportunities for a player to play in the World Cup while playing with Motherwell either. So.
Oh, I know, man. That's amazing.
It was definitely him and McFadden are right up there as just the two that will always be kind of just proper, and Keith Lasley, obviously, but the proper Motherwell heroes. Celtic 89-93, I take it we're kind of pushing the boundaries of your memory here again.
I'd be on here.
Well, there's definitely no point in us talking about things that we don't remember. That'll not be good for anybody to listen to. Next, I've got Jim O'Brien. Had a couple of good seasons at Motherwell. Left for Barnsley at the end of that. Loved the office. Loved singing in the team bus. Released a few songs. He was a big character, decent player as well.
Aye. I remember, he's an old man. I remember kind of on the fringes, like kind of Celtic first teams. He would have been around about the same time as like Charlie McGrew was first going to break through, and like Sy Ferry and all that. He was one, I'm sure he was good in football manager. I would have been champ manager at the time. I'm sure he was decent in that. But he came into my work. I worked in a sports shop, and he came in one day when he was at Motherwell. Him, Stevie Hamill, and Ross Forbes came in looking for new boots. And like Jim O'Brien, like he was just like cracking jokes constantly, like just all, like buzzing about, like putting things up, like trying things on, like trying to make the boys laugh. He was just a massive personality. He was like the Tasmanian devil coming into the show, man. He made some mess.
There's a class story about him when Jim Gannon was the manager, and aye, there was quite a few players kind of frozen out, and Jim Gannon running back alongside the minibus, and a bottle of water being poured over his head, and it all been kind of like straight away he was absolutely certain that it was Stephen McGarry, despite the fact that I think all this time the manager was quite aware that it was Jim O'Brien, but that is just but at that point McGarry was just further down the pecking order than Jim O'Brien was, but neither of them really played.
No.
And then Craig Brown came in after Gannon got sacked, and he just seemed to properly get a new lease of life. He remember he scored against Kilmarnock and did like a kind of stage dive into the front row of the stand. but you're right, he was kind of, he had that much energy. He's quite a tricky winger, and wingers are frustrating in Scottish football. It doesn't matter who you're playing with, you'll either get a winger that's in fire or just kind of Nadia Chiefji type stuff where it'd be as well no being there. But yeah, I liked O'Brien. My mother, I was quite sad to see him go as well. That kind of good team that was built up over a couple of years that had many years in Europe and stuff like that. So yeah, one that I've only got positive memories of. Another one I've got positive memories of is Willie Faulkner, who came in the 90s and did really well after his time at Celtic. Scored some important goals that helped steer Motherwell towards safety.
Aye, man, aye. He's another man I don't remember too much of, but he's another one that's kind of well spoke of, do you know what I mean? We talk to kind of older guys at the pub or whatever, like after games and that, and they talk about the 90s, like Willie Faulkner's one of the names that comes up time and time again. And I've seen a couple of clips of him and that. He looked like a player, didn't
he? He had a ridiculous record when he first came in to Motherwell in 96. I think he scored 7 and 8. Completely helped keep them up. So after that, he kind of did fade away. And he was one of the players as well that got released when Harry Campman came in. He went to Dundee for 3 seasons and kind of moved down the pyramid after that. But yeah, he was certainly a worthwhile investment, and one of the players that, again, I think maybe was moving to his end of his career when he joined Motherwell. The final player we've got on our list could be quite an interesting talking point. It didn't play much for either team, but certainly is definitely the biggest character on the list, it must be said. A bit of a Marmite character, Paul Slane.
Aye, oh, I know. Where did you start with Paul Slane? Because I remember he kind of broke through, didn't he, at Motherwell? Did he score in a couple of qualifiers for you?
Yeah, and the thing is, he was properly exciting. Just a young guy that we hadn't seen much of at all, and then suddenly he was really making his mark.
Right. What was he like as a player, like for Motherwell?
He was exciting.
I
think it really surprised everybody. He played a handful of matches. And then he refused to sign a contract.
Right.
And then...
I didn't know that, right. Is that when Celtic... Nothing about that.
Yeah, I think he was still on a youth contract or something. Cause he was really young when he came in. So that was 2009, so it would have been what? He'd been 17 at the time when he came into the team, and it looked like he had the potential, but just like at every club, there's guys that'll come in and look pretty decent in their first kind of couple outings, and then it's maybe too much too soon, and they'll maybe fade into the background, or they'll need more time training with men and everything else. But he straight away was, as soon as there was interest from elsewhere. That was him.
Aye.
Gone. And to be fair, he couldn't have made it over 50 appearances in his whole career.
I know. I don't think he's always wild, isn't he? He's absolutely wild.
He's clearly. The thing is, I don't really watch I only watch the one-on-one Cy Ferry stuff, to be honest, because he really annoys me. But I don't know. It's kind of just having someone that always needs to be speaking at every point of the conversation, Paul Slane. People love him, though. He's made quite a. He's kind of built up this persona for himself, and he's done really well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't doubt for a second that's actually him, because you couldn't really put that on, could you?
I know, imagine having to pretend to be like that all the time. You'd be knackered. He must be just generally being like that all the time. It's wild. It's just, I've never, like, watching the videos and that, I've never seen anybody like that in my life. He's like a jester. Like, he's just always doing stuff, and he's butting in, and he's like, wait, do you see this man? And just get all these stories, he can re-laugh and all these mad jokes, and he's bizarre. He's like, I don't know, man. He's like, he's a comic creation or something. Like, somebody's just made him up. Can he be a real guy?
It's almost like a string to Cy Ferry's bow that he's just brought him out the cupboard.
Aye.
In terms of his football, he was obviously really unlucky with injuries as well. He did go to Celtic to be a first team player, but you would have thought that he would have kind of kicked on from there, and he never really.
I know. He's obviously a talent. He's just, I don't know, mentality thing. He's just obviously just wasn't suited to the lifestyle of a professional football player.
I think he comes across sometimes as a wee bit dismissive and disrespecting his time at Motherwell. I heard him say a few things about Stevie Craigan. I thought, oh, that's.
Oh, not really.
You kind of think, this is a guy that had over 50 caps for Northern Ireland. He captained his country. I don't think he would pretend to be the most skillful of footballers that ever graced God's earth. But at the same time, he had a hell of a lot better career than Paul Slane did. So maybe some of the stuff he just said to get people's backs up. But
he's playing up. Well, into it as well. He's kind of playing up, and he's got to be like that to get the wheels on, I suppose, as well. But he seems to have found his calling.
I'm looking at his Wikipedia page, and it finishes with, he is also a keen supporter of Argentine side Boca Juniors. And I don't know if that's true or not. That just seems like a random tidbit that they've just added at the end of that. Well, Chris, we've kind of covered the great and the good over this three quarters of an hour or so. Nice wee trip down memory lane. Doing these 14 podcasts in 14 days to support Sam H. And every episode I kind of ask, look, this is a unprecedented time. People are struggling to fill their days. We were talking about it a wee bit before we came on, about how difficult it is to keep yourself going and keep yourself occupied. How are you coping with everything, and what do you do to try and make these days just a wee bit more bearable?
I think the first couple of weeks of this was a bit mental, and nobody really knew what was happening, and I was finding myself just like going to the news or like scrolling through Twitter, checking everything that's happening, like with this coronavirus, and like reading the news constantly, and just seeing like death toll rising and confirmed cases rising and stuff, and it was definitely like getting me down, like it's really, really scary to read all this constantly. And I found that mostly I'm a writer, but when I was sitting down to write and trying to be creative and trying to come up with ideas for this new book I'm writing, like, I was really struggling, because I kept thinking about everything that's happened this pandemic, and it's kind of hard to keep yourself motivated and that, you know. But I found that just trying to get into a good routine, like get up in the morning, try and stay off my phone as much as I can, because it doesn't do any good to just be reading these horrible statistics constantly. Just trying to stay off my phone as much, trying to keep myself busy, keep writing, get out with the dog, if for a walk. And I think it's important. I think a lot of people are kind of feeling guilty about how productive they're being the new. And I think a lot of people are kind of feeling pressure to be doing something with this time that's kind of creative and productive and is going to be beneficial for them when they come out of this lockdown. But I think, like, just go to get through it. Do you know what I mean? Just do the things you know that make you happy. Don't feel guilty about it. You need to look after yourself during this. You need to look after your mind, especially. So I'd say to everybody, you know, just do the things that make you happy. Try and block out all the stuff that's going on if you can. Try and take your mind off it for a bit. Watch a film. Go for a walk. Just try and keep yourself active and on. I just try and, like, distract yourself here, I would say. It's the main thing. It is, it's unprecedented. So everybody keeps saying it's just wild. There's no kind of blueprint, there's no guidebook for how to deal with this. So you just need to do what kind of works for you, and you'll find what works for you. And just go for it and don't feel guilty about taking the time for yourself.
Exactly right. And I think that's something we've kind of talked about as well. I see quite a few people in the likes of Pine Bovril or on Twitter saying, I feel guilty of the fact that I'm moaning about missing the football when there's so much else going on. But for me, I think that football's such a big part of our lives as well. So you don't need to feel guilty about missing something that you love.
I mean, that's the same thing.
It's, you, all of us will have our friends that perhaps they only meet on the Saturday when you go to the football.
Aye, no.
Your routines and everything else, which is so important in all our lives. I don't think that there's anything wrong with missing something that you love doing. I think that's just only natural, to be fair. And I guess, cause, like the rest of us, you're yearning for that moment where it's a Saturday, 3 o'clock, and hopefully the sun's shining and we all get back to it. Because I think that first day, you think about the first day of the season when the grass is freshly cut and you feel like you're seeing the new players for the first time. And this will be like tenfold, though, won't it? It'll be proper.
Honestly, I would give anything for like a freezing cold December night, Wednesday night against like Alpenakis or something. Like, honestly, like, give anything just a wee taste of the football, man. Like, I didn't realise how much I would miss it. I didn't think I would. I've got a season ticket on that now, but I think being a Celtic fan, they kind of take it for granted a wee bit because you're going every week and you're winning near enough every week. So it comes to kind of routine in that. But now, like, you know, just don't take it for granted. You know what I mean? And like you say, like, you do kind of, there's mates that you only see at the football and things like that. And there's some pals I've got, and all we talk about is football, and we've got nothing else to talk about.
You quickly realise you've not actually got much in common with your pals.
I don't have any common with this player, apart from the fact they support Celtic.
It's been an absolute pleasure, this. I've really enjoyed it. There's been some interesting characters that I've played for both clubs. Apologies in advance for our sketchy memories, but I suppose when we're going back to the age of 2 and 3 for both of us, it's a wee bit more difficult. I wish you all the best with the writing. As I say, I've absolutely loved the first two books, and I've really enjoyed the TV stuff as well. Particularly stuff in the Terrace Show, which I've said so many times before, for me that's been an absolute breath of fresh air, having a Scottish football show on that's just class.
It's brilliant. Let's see the stuff getting into little low leagues and stuff. I didn't really have any interest in it, and I started watching the Terrace, you know, and I'm like, by myself, you know, I'm checking the scores. Oh, what's Stenhouse Muir up to? I mean, how are they scoring? this weekend and stuff, like, it's brilliant. So that is a real breath of fresh air, man.
And it's brought us the Partick Thistle song and the Livingston song as well. So that's
you can't beat that. That was two of my highlights for last year.
I know, as I say, as much as I've always enjoyed your stuff, when you're going up against things like the Height song and the Livingston song, I was a wee bit disappointed when your face popped up that day.
I know, I got a lot of people on it.
Chris, thanks again, mate. Very, very much.
Cheers, thank you, mate.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. Until then, thank you. Goodbye.
face like an